As we await the first presidential debate tonight, it's time for the Political Junkie. Welcome back, Ken. How are you?
Excited. I'm very excited about Monday Night Football, because that's what I'm going to be watching that.
You are not.
Oh, my goodness. It's an amazing event. You know,
The buildup is ridiculous, but I can't help it.
This election has been ridiculous, so why not?
Yeah. If you have questions for Ken on the campaigns, the candidates, tonight's debate, good time to get a question in on Twitter or on the phone, 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. So, Ken, it's been very intriguing to hear how Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump's teams are managing expectations ahead of the debate. I mean, they're talking about Clinton reading these huge binders of policy. She doesn't need that. I mean, she knows all this stuff backwards and forwards. What are they trying to communicate about that? They're trying to scare Donald Trump or what?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, remember that we said the same thing about Gore and Bush in 2000, that Bush was a lightweight. Gore knew all these things backwards and forwards and inside and out, and all he had to do was show up and win. And of course, when you have expectations like that, and of course, George W. Bush handled himself fine, and what we saw with Al Gore, a lot of it was contempt for Bush, and the famous sighs, like, and the rolling of the eyes. Sometimes nonverbal things or even just little ticks that people pick up can sway a lot of voters.
You know, I was reading a piece, on Politico maybe or in the Times, about how for as much emphasis as the media and Americans put on these debates, they don't really shift voter outcome. The one moment that they pulled out was the Dan Quayle and why can't I think of the vice president? Yeah,
Lloyd Benson.
Right, that debate.
No, I'll disagree with you on that, because when you think of Lloyd Benson and you're no Jack Kennedy and Dan Quayle staring into the spot, you know, the lights like a wounded deer, and everybody said, boy, that was terrible for Dan Quayle. And the Bush-Quayle ticket won 40 out of 50 states
that year.
So I'll give you two presidential debates that seem to make a difference. 1980, Carter and Reagan only debated once. Carter had a lead going into that debate, which was only a week or so before the election. A big mistake for Carter. Reagan was masterful. He had the "Are you better off now than you were 4 years ago?" and the "There you go again." And he came off as folksy and likable. And Carter never recovered, and of course, since Carter didn't want a second debate, it was too late for him to rebound, and Reagan won a landslide. Also, in 1960, I think Kennedy and Nixon, even though Kennedy and Nixon both went into the debates tied, they came out of the debates tied, and basically the election was a near photo finish. I think people saw John Kennedy as presidential, and we use that word a lot with Donald Trump, whether he's presidential. I think we said that a lot about John F. Kennedy, and the debate showed he was, and that made a difference as well.
You know, I hear you on the Lloyd Benson, Dan Quayle thing. I will say, though, that I think this measure of presidential is different for Trump than, you know, it was for some of these previous candidates, right? Because there's so much controversy about his behavior. This is an opportunity. You know what I'm saying is I think the landscape is different coming into a debate on that question for him.
And I do. And I think the score, I mean, if those who are keeping score at home, you know, I think the people who keep score will have different things to grade by. I mean, we always talk, I mean, we think of the famous Gerald Ford, there's no Soviet domination of Eastern Europe. And everybody said, oh, my goodness, what a gaffe that was. Well, Donald Trump has been saying so-called gaffes for 16 months now about women, about Muslims, about Mexicans, about the handicapped, and people saying, "Oh, he crossed this line. This could be really damaging." And yet, look at the polls. The polls have really tightened. There's a new poll that came out in Pennsylvania that has an almost a photo finish between Clinton and Trump, and that was supposed to be one of her best states. So,
what's the margin of undecided on that one, Ken? Do you remember?
It's 40-38 so it's 40-38, which is 78, and then 9 for Johnson and 3 for Jill Stein. Hmm. But there are still maybe anywhere between 8% and 10% undecided. I suspect most of the undecideds are Republicans who just cannot stomach the thought of Donald Trump, but cannot abide by the thought of Hillary Clinton being president. So I kind of think that if the undecideds start to move, it could be, I mean, who knows, but it could be Republicans who are coming home. So I don't, wow. I just kind of think that the Democrats who know where they are, where they want to, how they intend to vote in November, have already made their peace with Hillary Clinton as the nominee. So, boy, it's close.
If you have a question for Ken, 651-227-6000 and on Twitter at CarrieNPR. Ken, I was reading about some of the analysis of Clinton Trump and what's going to happen. And a Clinton advisor, longtime Clinton advisor, says the fear is that she'll get lost in the moment and no one is better at seizing the moment than Trump. That's pretty true, isn't it?
Well, you know something, I mean, Donald Trump famously said over and over again during all those debates during for the Republican nomination, when all those candidates were in, he said, I won every debate. Polls show that I won every debate. And every debate I found him floundering in and unable to complete a thought and unable to be specific other than lobbing off histrionics and jabs and gotcha things and things like that. So I kind of think that I think Hillary Clinton's probably the only thing that she's most nervous about is which Donald Trump is going to show up. Is she going to show up? Is Donald Trump going to be the one who could be nasty and zingers? And, you know, the other day he even mused out loud on Twitter. Did I say out loud on Twitter?
But anyway, you did.
Yeah, exactly. The thought of Jennifer Flowers inviting Jennifer Flowers to show up the debate. I mean, that is just beyond the pale and just shows how schoolyard this whole thing has become. But if suddenly somehow Republicans or his staff got to him and said, look, this is the time to win people over. I mean, I don't know how you act a certain way for 15 months and then suddenly change everybody's mind with 40 days to go before the election. But if he turns out not to be, you know, a buffoon and somebody who could be presidential and serious-minded, I just wonder if that just changes the whole dynamic.
A call for you here from Kathy in Minneapolis. Hey, Kathy, your question for Ken.
Hello?
Hi. What's your question for him?
Hi. Thanks for doing this. Well, you know, there's a third person in the ring, and that's the moderator. And I'd like Ken's comments on who this person is, or are there more than one? You know, they rotate during the debate. And then what this person's qualifications are, because, you know, how they manage that debate is really important. So I'd like some info on that.
It's Lester Holt of NBC, right, Ken?
Not only is Lester Holt, I mean, the other day, you know, how Donald Trump loves to play the refs, you know, working the refs, they call it, because they try to say, well, everybody's biased against me, and Lester Holt, we know, is a registered Democrat. Well, Lester Holt happens to be a registered Republican. He's the only Republican of the bunch of moderators. In this first debate, it'll be only Lester Holt. There was a lot of debate over what the role should be. I mean, of course, we saw with Candy Crowley 4 years ago in the Obama-Romney debate when Romney made a statement about, I guess it was about Libya and Benghazi and terrorism, and Candy Crowley corrected Romney. And a lot of people jumped on Candy Crowley because they said it's not the role of a moderator to bring in facts. I mean, we can't have facts in a debate,
jeez,
right? So, I mean, she got really torn apart. And Bob Schieffer, you know, was on my Political Junkie show a week or so ago, and he said that it should not be about the moderator. But having said that, you also have a candidate who's going to be in the debate tonight who has a history of making things up. And so is it going to be Hillary Clinton's role to just say, no, you're not, it's not true? And he'll say, yes, it is true. I think Lester Holt has a lot of things on his plate, on his mind. But I also think that he's the guy who has to say, wait a second. Let's turn to the history. Let's turn to the facts. And you can't just get away with things. They're not true just because you're saying it's
well,
true.
I think you've kind of set up a good frame for how Lester Holt can do this in a way that doesn't look like he's just straight out fact checking, which we want the moderators to do, but we realize that there's some, you know, controversy maybe around that. Just what you just said, can't he say, how does what you're saying square with what we know about, you know, stuff like that? I mean, a way to kind of edge into holding Trump accountable with what history shows or what the facts show or what the numbers show, that
said,
kind of thing.
What you've said in the past, exactly.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, not to compare tonight's event with the commander-in-chief forum a few weeks ago on MSNBC, but Matt Lauer got pilloried because Donald Trump would say all these things about Iraq, and there was no follow-up.
And I think that might have been a moment for Matt Lauer to say, we do know that you were on the radio in 2005 in an interview with a DJ, and you said this.
Right.
I mean, there is a way to do this, right?
Yeah. I don't think Matt Lauer came prepared with that kind of responses. But Lester Holt and certainly the other moderators, Kathy called about who were the moderators in the second debate, the town hall meeting, it'll be Anderson Cooper and Martha Raddatz as co-moderators. And in the final presidential debate, it'll be Chris Wallace of Fox News, who, interestingly, is the only, as far as I know, the only registered Democrat of all of them.
That is interesting.
Because the others, I think, non-affiliated, and of course.
But Chris Wallace has also said, Ken, that he doesn't think the moderator is there to fact check.
That's right. So it'll be very interesting to see if Hillary Clinton is given an opportunity to just respond, give her case, or she has to just say, no, that's not true, no, that's not true. And a lot of times when you listen to a Trump debate, he'll say, well, it is true. And then the moderator, look, am I going to spend 20 minutes saying, yes, you're wrong, or no, you're wrong, or do I move on? And so Trump does that better than anybody else.
Yeah. Call here for you, Ken, from Tim in Crookston. Hi, Tim. What are you interested in?
Yeah, good morning, Ken.
Good morning.
Well, I'm wondering, on this idea of fact-checking, we're in the modern age, and I know they're talking about, should a moderator fact-check or should it be the candidates? But with the modern electronics and Google and everything else, I mean, why couldn't we have, a scroll on the bottom of the screen and there's another room full of people fact-checking every time someone says something? So as Trump or as Hillary says blah, 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 the bottom says, no, they did not increase taxes.
The idea of that. Can you imagine that?
I'm trying to picture that, especially on NPR. I mean, how do you do that on the bottom of the screen? It's going to be so difficult. No, Tim makes a good point. There's no question that there are scores of fact-checkers sitting around watching this debate, watching tonight's debate, and will be ready with their post-debate analysis. But let's be honest, not many. We're expecting 100 million people, possibly, to watch the debate tonight. You're not going to have, you may have 100 people looking at what fact-checkers have to say on the next day.
I have your newsmaker mystery sound of the week. Listen to this, Ken.
Donald Trump falsely claimed that NBC News anchor Lester Holt is a Democrat when he's actually a registered Republican. Yeah. In other words, Trump just alienated the one black guy who might have voted for him.
We talked about that a minute ago. Who is that?
It sounds like it could be. Is it Jimmy Kimmel?
It's Conan O'Brien.
Oh, Conan O'Brien.
Close.
Oh,
yeah.
No, I mean, that's kind of cute.
And it's funny because it's kind of almost true.
Here's an interesting thing. There's an LA Times poll that came out over the weekend that showed a national poll that showed that Trump's share of the African-American vote moved from 3% to 19.6%. I don't buy it. I can't imagine it. But
Did you say LA Times?
Times? The LA Times, nationally,
19%. I don't believe that.
I don't believe it either. I don't believe it. But you saw that yesterday he mangled the name of the African-American Museum in D.C. He's talking about how to black voters, what have you got to lose? I mean, that's a great slogan. Now, what do you got to lose? Jump off the cliff. What do you got to lose? I mean, it can't be any worse than what it's like now. If that's the case, then why Democrats are so nervous.
A call here for you from Kevin in Cottage Grove. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, great topic and great point about, these sound bites. It's sticks in my head that a long time ago, these stopped being debates. They're really not debates. They're just, they throw out topics and the two candidates give their sound bites around them and then they bicker with each other. Has anybody ever talked about, or I'd be curious what Ken's thoughts were on trying to turn this back into maybe a real debate where questions would be submitted to each candidate's team? They would maybe record this with no audience and then it would be reviewed by, it would almost be like playing the debate and having political reviewers review it.
This is kind of an interesting idea, Ken.
Well, you know, the problem I think with what Kevin is saying is that I think the reason 100 million people are tuning in tonight is not because they want to know what Donald Trump has to say about NATO or Hillary Clinton wants to say about gun control. I think there's this cultural divide in the country that comes out in their responses. And I think I think what Kevin is describing is what a debate should be. John Donvan, who's a correspondent for ABC News, and I think he's a moderator in something called Intelligence Squared US or something like that.
And they're really good.
They are very good. He is very smart. And he was on my program a few weeks ago saying that we should have one topic, one candidate should be in favor of it, the other one should be opposed to it, and really coming up with their policy positions rather than, you know, nyan-nyan kind of backs and forths.
I love the idea of that.
It is a great idea, but this kind of, I can't envision it with this kind of candidate. So giving somebody questions in advance and have them or their staffs most likely come up with a final product is not the same thing as just watching them live. And I think that's what people are watching for.
I have one last thing to share with you, Ken. I had Carl Hiaasen here last week for Talking Volumes. And you know he lives in Florida, and he writes a lot about Florida. And he said after the 2000 drama with the hanging chads and all that, that he thinks Floridians are just lucky that the rest of the nation lets them vote. So they embarrass themselves so much that Floridians should just be grateful that we care what they have to say in an election.
Well, you know something, given the fact that Donald Trump has already said this is a rigged and fixed election, given the fact that you're going to see a lot of people at the polling booths probably questioning the validity of all these people showing up to vote, I think there's a very strong likelihood, especially in a close election, that there will be many Floridas on November 8th.
Wow. Okay, Ken, I'll talk to you next week. Thank you.
Thank you, Carrie.